south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
People are always asking me about rental cars here in Latin America because, obviously, few people drive their own car down, and I don't recommend it. Though ever so often, some hardcore I-don't-give-a-damn types will drive their cars down and shoot me an email and say, "Hey, no problem, Johnny, I did it." By the way, if you want to roll the dice and do it, well, it is an adventure. That said, if you're so inclined, here's a few tips. Number one, have 3 separate hard copies of all your paperwork and have it notarized and have it on a little USB device, too, in case you lose it or it or your car gets stolen, so you can pop over to a cafe internet and print your paperwork out again. Number two, have a lot of $20 bills for bribe money because you're probably going to get hit in various Mexican departments as you're driving through. Departments, by the way, are their states. And often, you know, the cops will call ahead once they've hit you for a bribe and let their buddies know in the next state or department that you're on your way and report how much they were able to wangle out of you. So the next cops that stop you will know what the traffic will bear, so to speak. And you know, what makes you an obvious mark as you're driving through Mexico is that your plates will be from a U.S. state, not a Mexican state. Therefore, you'll stick out like a sore thumb. By the way, like I said in the last show, once you've reached the country you're going to settle in, you've got between 30 and 90 days to register that car, pay the taxes on it, and get some new plates for that Latin country. And you will need a lawyer to do that for you. And another thing, if you have a nice car up in the States and you're thinking about bringing it down simply because it's a late model or 4x4 or whatever, you always have to balance that against what you could get by selling it in the States versus what one just like it costs down here in Latin America. And you know, I hear this refrain quite often. They say, "Johnny, but I take such good care of my cars. I've got a 2005 Dodge Ram in perfect condition with only 26,000 miles on it. I really want to bring it down. It's my baby. I just know I'll never find anything like it down in Latin America." Well, I hear stuff like that from expat wannabes and gonna-bes all the time. And you know, what you say might be true, but remember, there's a lot of old guys and old ladies down here who haven't been driving their cars, and they're sitting in garages, and eventually they get the cobwebs dusted off them. They get pulled out of the garage and sold, which is why I always recommend you stay away from the used car dealers. I found that the used car dealers down here are worse than the ones up in the States, if that's possible. They know every detailing trick in the book and how to make a motor sound and look good, even if it isn't, and they'll roll back the odometer, too. And there's no one to call and no one to sue if you find out that's been done. And there's a real epidemic of that going around when it comes to cars that have been driven down from the States, which is why I almost always recommend you buy a car that's been sold initially from a dealer down here. They call that, in the ads and such, de agencia, which means the agency. In other words, the car was initially purchased in Latin America when it was brand new at a real bona fide car dealership agency. You know, like Honda, Kia, Ford, Audi, Mercedes, whatever. Then at least you can be sure that the car wasn't purchased as a wreck up in the States, then shipped or driven down, bondoed, repaired, and restored down here. Those are the cars you want to stay away from, but how do you know? Sure, there's some nice ones that pop through once in a while. I mean, a gringo driving a nice car down is the perfect case. But that's really a 100-to-1 shot. With those kind of odds, it's almost impossible to find a car like that. Besides, if a gringo is going to go through all that trouble to drive it down or have it chipped, he's not going to sell it when it gets here. So the odds aren't good. The other 99 out of 100 cars that come in from the States were generally wrecks bought at an auction for cheap, maybe even scrapped, and that's exactly why they bring them down to Latin America, for the cheap labor, to put them back together and do the bodywork, etc. And believe me, the mechanics and body men down here can really make them look like new. You know, you hear a lot of stories about used cars down here. In fact, the famous Captain Mango told me a story the other day about a guy we both know who bought one of those cars that had been shipped down from the States. He thought it was a great deal. He paid something like $15,000 for it. And it was a fairly late model BMW 5 Series SUV. That's their top-of-the-line SUV and new, probably 50 or 60 grand. For that year, a couple years old, probably was worth 30. Now, this one was very low mileage and looked absolutely pristine. I saw it myself. It was impressive. And for a second, when I heard he paid only 15 G's for it, I thought, man, I'm jealous. I want one of those. Now, apart from the fact that's not the kind of car you want to drive down here, sure, it's luxury all the way, but, you know, you're setting yourself up as a mark. It's what every up-and-coming Latin wants to drive, you know, because it's all about the show, yet it's also what every bad guy and no-goodnik wants to steal. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, as Captain Mango relates, our mutual friend bought that car, and after a couple of months, things started going wrong. A little thing here and a little thing there. And you know, buying original parts for a BMW SUV like that probably costs four times as much as buying them for a Nissan or a Toyota. Then came the last straw. He's driving it on a long-distance trip to the beach, and it starts raining. All of a sudden, the water starts pouring through the sunroof, causing, as you might imagine, a small disaster in the interior of the car. Now, you have to imagine, to take off and replace a sunroof with original BMW parts for that model, you know, they're complicated electric things with servo motors and stuff. And to do it right, not screw around with silicone caulk and all that, well, you're looking at a couple of grand, I'm thinking. Though I could be wrong, I'm usually pretty bad at these things and underestimate. Anyway, you get the point, right? Now, it's a testament as to the craftsmanship of the body workers down here in Latin America, how well they can make a car look, even bring it back to its original luster after it's been totaled. That's how they can get the cars down here so cheaply. They've been in wrecks, and often the frames bent or out of whack. You know, they buy them cheap on these auction sites up in the States. So those high taxes, anywhere from 20 to 30% of a car's value, are pretty much a non-issue when a car has been scrapped or totaled, and it says so right on the title. By the way, no matter what car you buy down here in Latin America, it's got a completely new title in Spanish issued from the Latin country you bought it in. Now, if you could see the original U.S. title, you'd know if it was wrecked or scrapped, right? Well, the seller's never going to make that available to you. Now, I know there are ways to check the history of a car back in the States by having its VIN number. But it's a rare thing for the average consumer here in Latin America, anyway, to ever do that. In fact, I've never met a single Latin person who knew a system like that even existed. Which is why it's so easy to hide the fact that cars come down here as wrecks. Just imagine the profit margin you can build into that car once you've had it completely redone, when you can hire as many excellent body guys as you want for 15 to 25 bucks a day. Nope, not an hour, a day. And so the only big money that's got to go into a car like that is if, for example, the headlights were bashed out or you're in need of other original parts that can't be fabricated here. Now, any of you listeners who've done body work, you know, if a car's frame or body has been bent, even if they try to twist it back to normal, it's never perfect. And they do have heavy-duty hydraulic machines that do that, you know. Kind of works. The end result can look pretty damn good. But nothing quite fits the same. So I repeat, stay away from cars that are brought down from the States. So then how can you tell one that's here from the States versus one that was purchased originally from a dealership in Latin America? Well, there are two very easy ways. One is the cars that originally came from a dealership here in Latin America all have their speedometers and odometers in kilometers. So therefore, if you see one that's in miles or miles per hour, that's an American one that's been brought down and repaired. Oh, and by the way, a car that's been brought down from the States is always slightly less expensive, maybe 10% or more, than the exact same one that was bought new at a dealership down here in Latin America. And the seller can do that because as the car came through most likely as a wreck or scrapped, he paid almost no import tax. And there's a second very easy way to tell if a car's come in from the States. Just look at the car's back panel or trunk for that chrome insignia or sticker indicating it came from a dealership in the States. For example, Jack Saville's Ford, Connecticut, or Ransom Pontiac, Cleveland. So then you might ask, if the car has a U.S. dealership sticker or logo on it, why don't they just take it off and just Bondo it up so as to give the illusion that it's not a car driven down from the States? Being that in this case, it's kind of the gringo disadvantage. The car actually loses points and is less valuable. However, that doesn't seem to be the case. Not with local Latin customers anyway, who make up 99.9% of the car buying public. The truth is, Latin buyers don't seem to care at all if the car came from a local Latin dealer or from the States. To them, all that matters is the car looks good, drives nice, and the price is right. So in the end, it's only us gringos and expats who put the time and effort into thinking about such things as where the car came from and why you shouldn't buy one that comes from the U.S. What we're talking about right now is not at all on the radar for Latin car buyers. They have no idea or don't want to know that the car they just bought could very well have been totaled or a wreck. How are they going to know anyway? When they get the car, it almost always looks great. Like I've said many times before, there is no Latin consumer reports. Latins don't investigate things. They buy what their neighbors buy and, if possible, try to get one up on them. In fact, the other day I checked a Consumer Reports article on the internet. The title went something like this. The 10 most unreliable cars and trucks on the market today. These are the cars and trucks that have gotten the worst owner ratings for their frequency of repairs and problems and such. So, number one, 2015 and 16, it was the Toyota Tacoma. You know, that big bruiser that's so massive and boxy, almost everyone has a terrible time maneuvering it into a regular parking place. I know my sisters would never give it a shot. Anyway, on that Consumer Report demerit list, it was neck and neck with another rhinoceros loser, the Chevy Suburban. Now, let me give you one guess, well, two guesses, as to the two most popular cars rich Latin Americans outfit their bodyguards in. Naturally, the two worst rated vehicles, the Tacoma and the Suburban. What else? Yep, you see bodyguards standing next to them in Starbucks and IHOP parking lots all the time. Oh, and in those parking lots, you'll see other battleship-sized cruisers, too. Chevy Tahoes and GMC Yukons, the biggest, most macho, the usual suspects, are also the perennial favorites of the pretentious jerks who have bodyguard brigades. Surprise, surprise, they're on that Consumer Report list, too. Not to mention, on that feces list, you have the Dodge Ram, which is huge with the upscale macho crowd, along with the Jeep Renegade. Which just goes to show that people with money often don't have much gray matter. I mean, come on, these guys have money and power and you'd think they'd know better. They'd do some research. But like I said, there is no Spanish version of Consumer Reports. I mean, come on, it's been around 50 years and still hasn't made it down here yet. In fact, I've never met a Latin person who's ever heard of it. Details, details, huh? So again, that's not to say there aren't some decent cars coming down from the U.S., but you're never going to know which ones they are, because they're all going to look nice when they're for sale on the lot. Now, you might be wondering why I talk so much about cars here in Latin America, because I get so many emails about them. How about this one? This one's from Dwayne. At least I think it's from Dwayne. Got his name cut off in the email somehow. It says, "Dear Johnny, I'm down in Mexico. I came down here before I found your show. And I have to say, you're right about most things concerning Mexico, but you know, for all the bad things happening here, there is some good, and it's still a hell of a lot better than living up in Arizona in the Big Brother world, where I hail from. I just hope to God the Social Security Administration doesn't pull a fast one, like the rumor that's been going around. People are saying soon enough, they'll pass a law that says you have to live 6 months up in the States, or they'll cut you off from Social Security. Now, I know it's only a rumor, but just look at the Canadian Big Brother example. They say if you don't live up in Canada for at least 5 months a year, they cut you off from the national health. I say, when you're down here living in Mexico or anywhere in Latin America, I suppose, screw the national health. You're right when you say it's a fifth to a sixth, as cheap as it is up in the States or wherever you have to pay for it in the first world without it being subsidized. But back to the point. Johnny, here's something about having a car in Mexico that almost no green gringos know. But first, let me clarify a few things about residency in Mexico, temporary and permanent. Now, your resident temporal is good for anywhere from 1 to 4 years. And upon expiration, it's automatically kind of renewed. Or you can apply for a permanent residency, which gives one permanent status without having to reapply over and over again. However, this all does have a bearing on owning cars here in Mexico. I'll get to that in a second. But I want to say that when you apply for a permanent residence, you can skip the temporary if you want, but you have to prove that you have a residence in Mexico and meet certain income requirements, as with all Latin permanent residency programs. And of course, there's a process now to be followed, which includes real proof of income coming from an outside source and fingerprints being taken, etc., etc. And you know, when it comes to us gringos living here, The Mexican government has its own stupid form of Big Brother, too. Oddly enough, it only seems to apply to us, not the locals. Now, as far as owning a car, as a temporary resident, you're allowed to keep the car that you drive here titled in the USA. In other words, you can have a car from Texas or Minnesota, whatever, and still have it in Mexico. No need to go through the process of getting it retitled with Mexican plates, which, believe me, is a nightmare. But get this, if you're a permanent resident, you kind of get penalized because they don't allow you to have a vehicle titled in the U.S. with U.S. plates. Ass backwards, as they say, although there's no such term in Spanish, I don't think. But get this, as a permanent resident in Mexico, you can import a vehicle, but you must pay a fee to get it in, which is a minimum of $1,500 U.S. That's the minimum. And that vehicle must be at least 8 years old. I know that sounds sort of ridiculous, but the explanation I've been getting from authorities and cops and such, even car dealers here in Mexico, is that there are now so many gringos here in Mexico, I think you hit the number at 1.5 million. If they were all allowed to bring in late model cars, duty-free or somewhat duty-free, that would virtually kill the new and late model car business here for the retailer. So they stick it to us and say that we can bring a vehicle in, we got to pay that $1,500 and the car must be at least 8 years old. But that's not all. It also must be a NAFTA, that's N-A-F-T-A, we all remember that stupid accord, was supposed to make goods and services cheaper, right? They call it free trade, but there's no such thing as a free lunch. Well, here's one way that NAFTA agreement stuck it to us Mexican gringos. Listen to this. If you're a permanent resident and bring a car in, it must be 8 years old and must be a NAFTA-certified vehicle. Do you know what that is? Does anybody know what that is? Well, I'll tell you. That means it must be made in a country that signed the NAFTA Accord, meaning the U.S., Canada, or Mexico. Now, that also means if it's Japanese-made or Korean-made or made in the U.K. or Europe, that would be Range Rover, Mercedes, BMW, Audi, Peugeot, Renault, Fiat. That means those European cars, as well as Toyotas, Mazdas, Hondas, Kias, Hyundais, etc., are excluded and you can't bring them in. Well, you can, but you'll pay such a high import tax that you might as well buy one at a dealer down here. And yes, they have dealerships for all those cars here. So I just wanted to throw that at you, Johnny. Love the show. Kind of makes me wish I'd have found you a lot sooner. Who knows, I'd probably be south of the border too. I mean, south of the Mexican border. Signed? Well, it's cut off, but I think it was Dwayne. Now, you mentioned NAFTA. That's the North American Free Trade Agreement. And that was signed only by the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. Didn't include any of the Latin countries south of the Mexican border. So all that stuff about cars and imports for NAFTA and non-NAFTA countries doesn't apply when bringing a car in south of the Mexican border. Though I'm glad, Dwayne, you shed a little light on the way things are in Mexico regarding importing cars. Though I guess to some people it's as muddy as ever, huh? However, at the beginning of the show today, we were talking about renting cars here in Latin America. Yes, you can rent a car at the usual suspects, Hertz, Avis, and stuff. They're all at the big international airports or quite nearby. But believe me, you don't get any kind of deals by renting at those places. However, there are a lot of independent car rental companies, usually tucked away in neighborhoods just outside the big major airports throughout Latin America, where you could often get deals at half the price of Hertz or National or Avis. And you know, some of those mom-and-pop car rental agencies have what you might call rent-a-wreck style cars, you know, cars that have the usual Latin America scratches and dents, but who cares really? Unless, of course, you're on a business trip or a date and you have to impress somebody, huh? So how much are we talking about per day? Well, the cheapest I've ever seen rental cars go for here in Latin America is around $30 a day. And of course, you have to add the insurance onto that. Usually another $5 to $10 a day. However, if you have a platinum credit card or American Express, they'll usually cover the insurance for you and you won't have to check that box. But typically you'll pay maybe $40 to $60 a day to rent a car down here. And if it's for a week or more or long term, probably around $30 a day. Of course, those are mom and pop prices. You'll pay a lot more if you're at the usual first world franchises like Hertz or Avis. And you know, occasionally gringos will show me a newspaper clipping from a Miami or Chicago newspaper or the internet saying that one of the biggies like National or Hertz is offering some kind of rental deal for $99 a week. That would be somewhere around $15 a day. Well, you're not going to get that kind of deal here in Latin America. I've never seen it. In fact, I've known people who've gone for that $99 a week deal in the States, and there's a lot of extra charges, believe me. Though the ad says $99 a week, that's a kind of a loss leader, come on. So best thing to do is just go on OLX.com, if you speak a little Spanish, and check out car rentals. You'll be able to find the best deals there. That's where you'll see all the mom-and-pop car rental agencies advertising. Oh, and you can rent motorcycles and scooters here in Latin America, too. And I know for a fact, some Harley-Davidson agencies will rent you a Harley. And a few off-the-books agencies will rent them, too. Yep, and you can rent yourself a bicycle. Also on OLX.com. And don't forget, almost all Latin countries now have OLX.com. It's their version of the Craigslist. So yes, you do have a lot of rental options. Now, since we're talking about rental cars, let me read you some excerpts of an article that came out recently in the British newspaper, The Daily Mail. It's entitled, "Is Your Rental Car Spying on You?" It starts by saying, "It's usually the first thing anyone does in a rental car, plug in their smartphone. However, IT experts have warned that users could be accidentally revealing everything from their text messages to their addresses to all their financial information, too." The FTC officials today urged renters to always delete their personal information when they return a rental car. But the question is, how do you do it, and how do you do it permanently? The article warns they've got your data as soon as you connect your smartphone, including text messages, home and work addresses, phone numbers, and potentially everything you've got on your smartphone. Lisa Weintraub Schifferle, attorney for the Department Division of Consumer and Business Education, says, "When I rent a car, it's fun to get all the bells and whistles like navigation, hands-free calls, text, streaming, music, and even web browsing. But what most people know is that when you enter the car's infotainment system, it'll store personal information. It may keep the locations you entered in your GPS, where you visited, and everywhere you travel in that car. And if you connect a mobile device, the car will keep your mobile phone number, call, and message logs, even the contacts and text messages. However, the answer is simple. Just delete that information," she says. "But unless you delete that data before you return the car, other people can view it, including future renters and rental employees, even hackers." She even warns not to connect your mobile phone or devices to the infotainment system just for charging them. It's safer to use a cigarette lighter adapter to charge devices instead of the car's USB port, she says. So then how do you delete your information from a rental car? Well, you go to the infotainment system settings menu to find a list of devices that have been paired with the system. Locate your own devices and follow the prompts to delete them. The owner's manual and the rental car company may have more information about how to delete your data, but you probably will have to ask them to get that information. So there you have it, yet one or two more things to worry about. And think about this when you're traveling and hooking up your devices. If there are hackers and no good nicks sweeping those systems, they'll know you're away from home and for how long. Of course, for those idiots who are posting their life history and all their happy meals and bowel movements on Facebook, it doesn't matter, does it? By the way, I talked to an IT nerd friend of mine recently, and he said, "You know what the problem with all this is? Rental car companies will be tracking you on GPS and your speed. So if you speed, run a yellow light, or do a Chicago roll, which you will because it is a rental car, right? They'll put your stuff in a big database, and next time you go rent a car, they won't let you. Or they'll just charge you an extra fee because they deem you a higher risk, just like insurance companies do after you get into an accident. So that's where we're heading with all this. And the easy answer? Drive a 1982 Ford Fairlane, or any car that doesn't have a map screen and GPS or a USB port. And I'll tell you this, if you go to a mom-and-pop car rental place here in Latin America, three-quarters of the cars on the lot that you have to choose from will be of the older, non-trackable type. Okay, enough said about that. Now, I'd like to mention something that confuses people a little bit. When they fly down to Latin America, or any country nowadays, you have to have a return flight. And we talked about, in a past show, a service called flyonward.com, where you can actually rent a return ticket for $9.99. And you do that if you're going to buy a one-way ticket. Say what? Yep. People used to buy one-way tickets all the time. But now, when you go to the airport, they'll ask you for a return ticket. You can't fly one way anymore. You have to have a return flight. And that's because all countries have a limit on the amount of days you can stay on the tourist visa. And in Latin America, that's usually 90 days. So when you travel to Latin America, for example, you have to show a return ticket when you check in at the airport that shows you're going to come back within 90 days. However, some people don't know when they want to return. For example, if they're coming down to a Latin country and applying for residency, in that case, you can't always predict how many days you're going to be down. And in other cases, for example, when a person comes down and just wants to explore and check things out, they don't want to have a definite return date. However, like I said, at the airport, they don't care about that. So you can still get a one-way ticket, but in order to comply with airport and country regulations, you can go to that website, flyonward.com, and buy, or actually they say on that website, you're renting a ticket for that return flight. Now, it might sound weird, even complicated, and quasi-legal. However, a lot of people are doing it, and some attendees to my Expat Insider Seminar have done it. In fact, one person sent me an email with his own feedback after using that system. He says, "Dear Johnny, in regards to flyonward.com and buying or renting a ticket for $9.99, it worked like a charm. And the irony is I was never asked for a return ticket at the check-in or customs in Guatemala." Just a note about that site, though. He says, "The Fly Onward website is totally automated, and if support or response to a question is required, then expect to get a little frustrated. The best thing to do," he says, "is to request a 24-hour ticket just prior to arriving at the airport, or request a ticket later if pre-planning your trip is needed." So there's a few pointers if you're coming down on a one-way ticket and you're going to fulfill that return ticket requirement using flyonward.com. By the way, our emailer says the irony is that he was never asked for a return ticket at the check-in or customs. Well, that's understandable because according to flyonward.com, you're automatically registered in airline computers as having a return ticket. So there's no need for them to mention it to you. To people in the airport and customs and such, it just looks like a regular return ticket. They don't know it was rented for just 24 hours for $9.99. Okay, we're getting towards the end of the show now, and I'd like to remind everyone, at whatever stage you are in your preparations for your plan B, which we all know means get out of Dodge and vote with your feet, well, if you're up there wondering what to do and you haven't got boots on the ground yet, the very next best thing is to enroll in my Expat Essentials course. Just go to expatplanb.com to check out my 9-hour course. It's the next best thing to getting boots on the ground. www.expatplanb.com.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.